propagating truth in a world of lies. You are listening to the John Age Project.
Thank you for joining us today on the Anomic Age. Today is Tuesday, April 16th, 2019. Proud to say we're almost up to episode 20. Next week we'll be at 20 and hopefully so much more to go. It's really been a pleasure getting to do these episodes. A lot going on behind the scenes. I always sort of jokingly say I think it could be a totally different program and perhaps more bizarre on the behind-the-scenes thing. But these shows haven't been easy to produce, I'll tell you that. There's been a whole lot of hoops to jump through and a whole lot of behind-the-scenes stuff. We'll just leave it at that. But I guess what's the old adage? Nothing worth having is easy. So hopefully everyone out there really appreciates the program. All the work that goes on that you never see that goes into this program. All kinds of weird technical issues here and there. We could do a whole episode just about those alone, but we won't. Today, once again, we have a very excellent guest for you on the program today, Mr. Zachary King. To be honest, so much has been going on behind the scenes, I really have not done my due diligence and done the preamble to the show as I usually do. Which is probably, in this instance, a good move because this episode's a bit longer than some of the past have been. The episode lengths have really gone all over the map. We started out with some really long episodes and we went to some middle episodes and we've had some fairly short episodes. This one's kind of in the middle of the road again. But Zachary King is going to bring a whole lot of information to the table about Satanism, about ministry, about escaping these sort of slings and arrows that our lives here seem to be getting worse and worse with. But Zachary King will be talking all about those sort of instances from the first-hand perspective, things that went on in his life and so on, and his way out. So he started out on the dark side and made it all the way to the light. So he'll be talking about all those things and then some today. But before I forget, please check out AnomicAge.com. If you're listening to this on iTunes or perhaps just stumbled upon a link on YouTube or Brighteon, check out AnomicAge.com. It's the hub. It's the grand central station of the program. So it's going to have all the guests, all their media links, all their book information, all their film information. I mean, there's just a wealth of knowledge at AnomicAge.com that if you're not checking that site out and sharing it with your friends, family, loved ones and enemies, you're not doing your part. So please, do that. Please, come on. So AnomicAge.com is where you can find all that and then some. As usual, if you find us on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and Brighteon or what have you, please hit the like button. These are more things I always just don't even think about. I'll be the first to admit, I'm pretty good at producing a product and doing this angle of the show. Terrible at the marketing. So, please hit the like button. Watch the films a few times. Send them to your friends. We got the audio version only if you just want to plug this in at the gym while you're doing some cardio or even while you're hitting the heavyweights or the heavy bag, what have you. Please check out the audio. If you're just into just the audio, it's a great way to pass the time on the drive and you will find yourself knowing more information from so many bright bulbs that we've had on the program, today being no exception to that. But if you're so inclined, you can watch these full videos as well. So that's always fun. I know a lot of people have different learning devices. I mean, a lot of people are more auditory and then some people are more visual. It's all over the place. So from AtomicAge.com, you can cover all bases if you want to. If you got that family member that might be a little on the fringe side of things and not knowing any of this information, you can send this stuff to them. Please do so. Other things, I'm going to really make it a point. If you remember our very first guest on the program, Raptor Man, he was doing a lot of articles and publications on geoengineering. I mean, this was months ago but he's got a lot more. And I've been communicating with him back and forth. I was really hoping to get him on the program, maybe as sort of a 1 year anniversary down the line, but he's coming out with so much great stuff. We may have to get him on sooner than later. Like I said, I have not done my due diligence. The truth be told, there's been so much going on behind the scenes. It's amazing this show is even here right now. But it is. So between now and next week and next episode, I will definitely be reading a lot of stuff from Raptor Man, uncovering more and more in this geoengineering realm. Or if you're not in the know, just the chemtrail, that sort of stuff. So we'll try to get some more information from him and perhaps articles and discuss those at greater length next time, when I hope everything on my end will be a little bit calmer and I'll actually have my wits about me and all my faculties, because I certainly don't feel like it right about now. But that's neither here nor there. The good news today is we have our guest, Zachary King. He'll be with us in a mere matter of moments. So stick around. And wait, mate. Hey, don't forget, hey. Somebody's about to shut it down because they thought, hey, we're just going to guest. No. One more thing. AtomicAge.com. Share the links. Friends, family, loved ones, and enemies. All the links. Media links, Twitter links, any kind of links. Check it out. As always, you can also donate to the program at the bottom right. We've incurred quite a lot of bills in the last few months. It's amazing how much it takes to put an even quite a conservative platform like this out there. I'm not even talking politically conservative. I'm saying, like, I don't have the shopping cart, 10 different ways to get stuff, and all these different media writers and programmers or anything. We don't have any of that. So I can't imagine how much a Goliath-sized site like that must cost. So if you are so inclined, and you're a big-time philanthropist, feel free to donate at PayPal at the bottom right of AtomicAge.com. If you go to Twitter, you can just do it directly there as well. So, now that being said, we will join our guest, Mr. Zachary King, in a mere matter of moments. See you in a bit. It is my distinct pleasure to welcome to the program today Mr. Zachary King. Zachary was an average boy in an average American neighborhood. He grew up in a Baptist home. He began practicing magic at 10 years old, joined a satanic coven at 13 years old, and had broken all 10 commandments by 15 years old. From his teen years to adulthood, he worked his way up to high wizard in the coven and actively pushed Satan's agenda, including ritualistic abortions and breaking up churches. But then, in January of 2008, while working at the jewelry kiosk, Zachary had an encounter with Our Blessed Mother, which changed his life. In the middle of the mall, through the power of the miraculous metal, Zachary experienced a peace that surpassed all understanding. That peace was Jesus Christ, the Prince of Peace. Our Lady's love rescued Zachary from hell and brought him straight to the heart of his son, Jesus Christ. He started going to St. Francis Xavier Catholic Church in Vermont, and in May 2008, Zachary King entered the Catholic Church. After 26 years of involvement with the occult, Zachary became a warrior for Jesus Christ and wants to share his knowledge for the protection of God's people. Zachary's testimony is an inspiration that proves how great God's mercy and forgiveness truly are, and above all, shows the depth of his love for us. Zachary is currently living in Kansas. He is an international speaker spreading the story of his miraculous rescue from Satanism anywhere he can. Wow. The bio alone. I just keep saying wow on the program, and I'm so blessed to have the caliber guests that I've had on and just such great stories and quite a lot of transformative stories like yours, Zachary. I'm so happy to have you on the program, sir. Thank you.
Well, thanks for having me.
Well, we could really begin anywhere, but I like jumping into the deep end of the pool. I know a lot of people might think, oh, this Satanism's a bunch of hooey and this occult stuff, that's just weird stuff you see on TV, and the Ouija board just a fun game. Could you sort of dispel that myth or rumor and get into your own story in that? I mean, that's a heck of an intro.
Well, you know, crazy thing about Ouija boards is that little planchette moves on its own and there's no batteries in it.
True.
So, you know, that's, you know, right off the bat, you know, that's anybody that's ever played with one of those things. Well, when I played with one for the first time, that planchette started moving and I thought my friend was moving it. He thought I was moving it. So we both took our hands off of it at the same time and it continued to move. And my friend got up and ran screaming out of the house. And I thought, I'm taking this thing home. This is awesome. You know, and yeah, I got really scary stories associated with that Ouija board, and I stopped using it.
Really?
You know, it's like I started hearing, I had it on my dresser in my house and my bedroom. And I had gone to sleep, and I woke up. It sounded like a freight train was going through my room. We didn't have a freight train near my house. You know, the railroad tracks were about a mile away. And, you know, it sounded like it was in my bedroom. And I woke up, I mean, I'm sitting bolt upright in the bed, you know, looking around, there's nothing there. And I turned on all the lights, and my Ouija board is on the floor. You know, I put it up on the dresser, so I... But we have dogs and cats in the house. I mean, they could have knocked it down. So I put it back on the dresser. You know, and I laid back down. And I sat there in the bed for a little bit, you know, waiting to see if the Ouija board's going to do something crazy. You know, nothing was happening. So I went back to sleep. Fell asleep and woke up again. It sounded like a semi-truck was driving in my bedroom. And my bed was shaking, and I woke up. I thought my dad was shaking the bed, trying to wake me up. And when I woke up, there was no noise in the room. There was nobody in there. I got up again, turned on the lights, and the Ouija board was on my floor again. You know, I put it up on, and there were no animals came in the bedroom. And I put it back up on the dresser, and I said, "You got to stop this. I got to get some sleep. You got to stop making this noise. You keep doing this, I'm going to take you outside and catch you on fire."
Yeah.
Stop. And I was 13 years old, you know, and I went back to sleep. And it sounded like I hadn't gone to sleep yet. And the thing hit the floor. And I stood up. I turned on the lights. And everybody else is asleep in my house. I stood up and walked outside with it, took it out to the garbage can out by the road, poured lighter fluid in it, and just got it on fire. I thought, you know, my dad's going to wake up in the morning and wonder why the trash can was on fire. And if he asks me, I'll tell him. But, you know, I hope he doesn't ask. And, you know, it's a nice little fire happening out by the road. And I just walked back inside.
Mm-hmm.
Never saw the Ouija board again.
Jeez. Yeah, I got a similar Ouija board story. It's nothing like that.
You know, if I'd have known what it was, I mean, you know, when we grew up and played with a Ouija board, it's not, we weren't told it was a demon. We were told that it's, you know, your great uncle Bob or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a portal to dead people that they can come in and talk to you. Well, everybody's got a favorite uncle or favorite aunt or cousin, somebody that died, you know, even your great-grandfather, somebody you didn't even know. You know, why not? It's a piece of cardboard with a piece of plastic on it, and it's got a bunch of yes and no and letters and numbers. And your loved ones love you. They're called loved ones.
Yeah.
So why not be willing to play with this and give your Uncle Bob the chance to talk to you? You know, the problem is it's not your Uncle Bob. It's a demon that knows your Uncle Bob. You know, so he's going to be able to give the answers that, you know, that only you and him knew. Because some demon somewhere knows your Uncle Bob and can give those answers. And those things aren't limited by space and time. You know, so, I mean, you're thinking he instantly knows the answer, but in reality, it's traveling to wherever, you know, if Uncle Bob is in hell, then he's going to hell to ask questions and come back to you.
I remember when I was a kid, we snuck in a graveyard and did it, and I was all upset because it wasn't working. We went back to my girlfriend at the time's house. I was probably 16, and it was just like you mentioned, it started moving. Me and my friend were doing it, and yeah, I was like, you're doing it. You're moving it. Yeah, you're moving it.
Yeah, if we knew how things really worked in this world, some of us probably wouldn't leave the house.
That's true.
You know, there's a saint named Padre Pio that said, and he died in the 1960s, like around 67. But he said that if you could see with spiritual eyes, there's enough demons to blot out the sun. You know, I mean, if you want to think about that, put that in perspective. Think about how many people have lived in the world since the earth was put here. You know, how many people would you think that is? And how do you figure that up? And I've heard that, you know, I mean, now there's 7.2 billion. How many billions of people have been here total, though? I've heard 50 billion. I don't know. But to put it in perspective, everybody that's ever lived gets a guardian angel. And guardian angels are not recycled. My guardian angel has only been my guardian angel. They haven't had any other job. So everybody's guardian angel gets used one time. One third of the angels were swept down from heaven. So that means one third of the angels are demons. And we know that we've had at least 50 billion angels because those are guardian angels. And there's 9 choirs of angels. And that means that there's demons probably in all 9 choirs. But of the guardian angels, you have, that means you have at least 17 million demons, or 17 billion demons. Because there's been one, you know, one guardian angel per person that's been alive. 50 billion, you know, one third of that would be 17, roughly. That's a lot of demons.
Yeah, that's a lot to wrap your head around.
Yeah. So, when I was 10 years old, you know, I was thinking that I'd seen all these, all the B movies, you know, magic, and, you know, we didn't have the money for anybody to make a Harry Potter, you know, movie. So there wasn't any big budget for magic movies.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we had like Rosemary's Baby.
Oh, yeah.
You know, or The Exorcist,
mm-hmm.
you know, and, you know, looking at stuff like that, I mean, being a kid and seeing that some movies have levitation, and when you're a kid, levitation is flying,
mm-hmm.
you know, and if I could fly on my way to school, you know, or be able to do a magic trick, but something beyond a card trick, you know, like if you could disappear and then reappear someplace else, you know, or levitate or make somebody else levitate, or, you know, have some girl's clothes fall off. You know, it's like, you're a kid, you know, you're like, that would be such a cool trick.
That's
you know?
The truth, yeah.
And, you know, that's, I wanted that stuff to be real. And so I asked my parents, they were devout Baptists, that means they never went to church. I asked them if, you know, is magic real? Is that something I can really do? You know, and my parents said, no, magic's not real. You know, and I asked my Baptist preacher, because he seems to know everything, he has all the answers. And he said, no, magic's not real. Now, here's a weird thing about that, is that there's like 30 verses in the Bible that speak out against magical things. Why would God tell you not to do something if it was impossible to do it? Like, if you couldn't lie, if it was impossible to lie, thou shalt not lie would not be one of the Ten Commandments.
That's right, yeah.
If it was impossible to kill somebody, thou shalt not kill would not be in there. You know, thou shalt not steal, because it's possible to steal. So if you could not do magic, if you couldn't talk to the dead, if you couldn't make anybody levitate, if you couldn't walk through the fire, you know, if you couldn't do any of these crazy things, he wouldn't tell you not to. But, you know, I'm a kid. I'm 10 years old. I'm not thinking in that rationale. You know, I'm just thinking, well, you know, my parents say I can't do it. So, but I'm also thinking, look at all the movies where magic can work. So maybe parents aren't, maybe they don't know everything.
Going all the way back to Peter Pan, you had them flying through the window with,
right. Wendy and all the kids and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And, so yeah, I'm really fascinated by magical things. Dungeons and Dragons came out in 1974. And all the older kids play it, so I start playing that with them. You know, I'm a little nerdy kid, and it's a math-based game, so sure, why not? And you know, so I'm doing that. And then also, the very first day in the fifth grade, the first day of school, this kid came up to me and he said, hey, at the first break, meet us in the bathroom. I'm a little stupid kid, sure, why not? I don't know what we're doing in the bathroom, but sure, let's do that. And I was at 10:20 a.m., and I go in the bathroom, there's like 49 other kids there, boys and girls. And they said, they brought out a paperclip and said, this is how we're going to turn off the lights. You just need a paperclip, you turn off the light, and then we're going to chant this Bloody Mary phrase into the mirror in the dark. And if you do it right, the spirit of a burn victim will show up in the mirror. You know, and I thought, all right, you know, who knows if this will really work, but sure, why not? You know, it's 10:20, there's no teachers in there, we're going to try this. And sure enough, you know, we did the chant, and then the spirits of the burn victim showed up in the mirror. This is 1976. We ain't got a Spencer Gifts you can go to and buy a holographic flashlight. Can't do anything like that. You know, this face shows up, and 49 screaming kids bolt out of the bathroom. Now, one child, one idiot, I'm calling that because it was me, decided this is the coolest thing in the world. I chanted a phrase 11 times, and that's what showed up. Now, so let's look here at the lack of brains of this particular 10-year-old child. This child is so stupid that he does not realize that if that ugly creature is standing next to him in the reflection, the demon's next to me. He's not in the mirror. He's standing next to me. That's not occurring to me. I thought this was the coolest thing ever. You know, and then eventually we had kids got hurt in their haste to leave the bathroom. Now, I don't mean like they got a bruise on them. I'm talking broken arm, broken leg hurt.
Oh, man.
So they sent notes home, you know, and I had to go up to my dad in the den and give him this note, you know, that says if I'm caught playing this game at school, I'll be suspended for 3 days, you know, and my dad had been in the Marines and was a giant man. At least it was to me when I was 10.
Yeah.
And, you know, when he called me into the den to ask me in his normal loving tone, have you been playing this game? I told him the absolute truth. No. So that I wouldn't get in trouble at school, I decided I would play the game at home.
Oh, man.
I had my own bathroom in my room. And, you know, when I was at school, I used to play the game once a day. And, you know, you had to sneak into the bathroom and do it, flip out the lights, say it, and, you know, it didn't work if you didn't have the paperclip to close it, to turn out the lights. So, you know, you had to get the paperclip. If you couldn't get the paperclip, no point in going to play it because you didn't have the lights out. But at my house...
How does the paperclip work with the lights? I'm missing that.
The light switch was... It was a metal switch, and then but it was a metal plate on the wall.
I gotcha.
And then the actual switch itself was... It took a special key.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay, yeah.
So instead of a key, if you had a paperclip, you could use that.
Mm, I understand.
It was like this slight raised plastic kind of doorway that you would put a key into.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like I said, if you didn't have the paperclip or the key, couldn't turn out the lights. And but at home, though, you know, you turn out the lights and go in the bathroom. And, you know, in the morning when I wake up, play the game. Brush my teeth, play the game. Go to the bathroom, play the game.
So it's drawing you in. More and more, it's drawing you in.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, before I leave for school, play the game. When I got home, my parents went home. You know, they own two businesses, so they're constantly at work. You know, they may or may not come home at the end of the night. There's a lot of times, you know, we'd have our dinner would be sitting for us in the oven. You know, we would just heat it up ourselves or be on the stove or whatever. You know, and we didn't see our parents that often when we were kids. So, you know, I get home from school, I'm playing the game. I have a snack, I play the game, I go to the bathroom, I play the game. You know, at the end of the night, I finally, you know, I'm taking a bath at the end of the night. You know, I go to the bathroom, I lock the door and take my bath. But, you know, why not just keep playing the game while I'm in there? I mean, I can get in and out of the tub in 5 minutes. But I can be in there for another hour playing that game as many times as I want to.
Wow.
You know, so I'm playing this game 25 to 50 times a day. You know, and every time I play it, I see the face. You know, and I'm thinking, this is the coolest thing ever. I don't know what this thing is. I don't know if it is the spirit of a burn victim. I don't know if it's something else. Is there a way I can harness this? Because I'm making something appear. What else do I have the power to do? You know, this thing, it's not attractive, but it doesn't seem to want to attack me. It's not talking to me. It doesn't go anywhere other than this mirror. But, you know, again, I'm not the brightest bulb, and it's not occurring to me that it's right beside me in the bathroom. You know, I'm thinking it's in, you know, it's in the mirror. So as I'm playing D&D every weekend, and I'm doing campaigns of that, and I'm always the sorcerer or the wizard in that, and then I'm doing this thing every day, multiple times a day, and it starts occurring to me, why am I wasting my time playing this? Maybe I could try a magic spell in real life and see what happens.
Hmm.
So, you know, I don't like my quiz every Friday, but I don't want my teacher to get hurt. I'm not a big fan of PE. I'm a little nerdy fat kid, you know, but maybe I can do a magic spell or something and prove that magic does work. And then I would know something that my parents don't know. I would also know something that most kids don't know. So I thought, I'm going to do a magic spell for money and see what happens. I'm made fun of every day because I'm a nerd. I don't need to be made fun of for one more thing.
Gotcha.
So I'm not going to tell anybody, but I'm going to do a spell for money. And then I did that on a Friday. Saturday, I went out and went playing, and I found a can of tennis balls with a $5 bill in it. I thought, all right, this is 1976, mind you, so... candy bars are 15 to 20 cents. Comic books are 15 to 20 cents. And penny candy is a penny. All right. This is cool. But that could have been a coincidence. So the next Friday, I did it again. And the next day I went out and I found a $10 bill on the side of the road. All right, that's pretty cool too. You know, 8 days, $15. Still could be a coincidence though. That was a tough sell. So the next Friday, I did it again. But this time I did it in the bathroom at home. And halfway into the money spell, I did the Bloody Mary chant. And when the face showed up in the mirror, I made sure it knew I was doing a spell for money. And then I finished my money spell. Next day, I went out and I was in this large, unpaved parking lot. And something caught my eye off in the distance. And I ran off and I found it. It looked like Monopoly money rolled up tight in rubber bands. I stuck it in my pocket and went about playing. And later that night, everybody's in bed asleep. I'm in my bedroom. Lights are out, sheets up over my head, flashlights in my mouth, unraveling my treasure. When I was done, it looked like Monopoly money because I'd never seen a $100 bill. And when I totally unraveled everything, I had 10 $100 bills.
Oh, wow.
10 years old, I'm worth $1,000.
Yeah, in 1976, that's big money. That's big money for me now, but that's even bigger money back then.
Well, yeah, one of the first things I went out and bought was like one of the Kiss albums. It was like Kiss Alive 2 or something like that. It was like $6.99.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Just dated myself.
And I got that record. I know about it.
I also got, I don't know if it was Alive 1 or 2. I know eventually I had both, but I bought Alice Cooper School's Out. And, you know, and then all the candy I could eat, pretty much. It's not like my mom or dad is going to notice that I gained 10 pounds. I'm already this little blob of a kid. And, you know, and then, you know, $1,000, I could do this spell every day. You know, in 1 year, I could buy a Lamborghini. I wanted a Lamborghini Countach more than anything. You know, I'm not thinking of the nuances of how do I get to the Lamborghini store? How do I get my Lamborghini home? My dad's going to have to drive this car home. And my dad drives like an old man. I don't want him driving my Lamborghini Countach. You know, I don't know about insurance, so I'm going to have to get insurance for it. I'm not even going to be able to drive the car for 6 more years. I'm not thinking of any of that. I'm just thinking in 1 year I could be driving a Lamborghini. If I didn't buy the Lamborghini, in 3 years I could be a millionaire. You know, now, again, I'm not thinking, how am I going to tell my parents that I'm now worth $1 million? I'm going to have to go to the bank and keep depositing the money without telling my parents. They're eventually going to find out that I'm worth $1 million. Where am I going to say I got it?
That's a good point.
So, but I know that magic is real. I know that my Baptist preacher and my parents don't know everything. And that I could do this every day for the rest of my life. And so I decide I'm going to do this. So when I'm 11 years old, I became the victim of a sexual assault at the hands of a female teacher at school.
Oh, man.
Now, she told me that it was my idea. I wanted to do it. I liked it. My body responded in a positive way. And if I told anybody, I'd be suspended and then I'd be expelled. My parents would disown me. And that I would go to prison. Yeah, and she's the teacher. Why would she lie to me?
Yeah.
So I couldn't tell anybody. So, like, I totally withdrew into myself. And the thing that gave me the most comfort and solace was magic. So, you know, when I did magic, I was 10 foot tall and bulletproof. So, you know, I just continued to do all these spells, you know, and just having as much fun as I could. Now, I was limited in my scope. I mean, I played D&D, and, you know, in that, if you're doing magic spells, then it's for light in a dark cave or jewels so you can finance your campaign. You know, it's pretty much what, I mean, there's no point in getting light. You know, the sun comes out 12 hours a day, so, you know, why, we don't need to do lights, but you know, my limited scope was I wanted to get laid where I wanted to get laid, and I wanted money. I wanted stuff. You know, the only way to get stuff is to have money, unless you can just make the stuff materialize. And I never learned how to do that. So, you know, I'm wanting, and if I can't get laid to a real person, then I want porn. So, you know, we didn't have porn everywhere like you have it now. You know, I know people now will be listening to this going, well, porn is just on your phone. Not back then. You know, back I had a rotary dial phone in my house. You know, it's like I couldn't even, when I applied at college, you needed a touchtone phone. I had to go to a phone booth because phone booths had touchstone, but my house didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that most people listening to my voice right now are going, phone booths? What's that? Well, that's the thing. If you look at the early Superman, he used to run into a phone booth and change clothes and fly out.
Yeah, that's it.
So, you know, I'm... magic is like, you know, the most wonderful thing. This woman assaults me. I withdraw further into myself. When I'm 12, there's this kid that we used to play D&D with. He used to play every weekend, and then he just disappeared. And we thought that he had moved because he stopped going to school. And it turned out he was homeschooled. And he stopped playing D&D with us. Well, he stopped playing D&D with us, but he didn't stop playing. You know, and we found out that there was this group that also believed magic was real. And this is where he was going. You know, and, you know, I know magic is real. So I'm like, well, maybe I can check these guys out. So I go check them out. Now, at my house, we had like a 19-inch TV color in the living room. And me and my brother had a 13-inch black and white TV in our bedroom. Over there, though, they had this 50-inch projection screen TV. You know, at my house, you could watch a G-rated movie and PG-rated if it was rated by my dad. But over there, there were R-rated movies, X-rated movies, triple X-rated movies.
Jeez.
I had triple X-rated movies with kids in at my age. You know, I found out that the woman that sexually assaulted me at school was a member of this club. I found out that what happened to me when I was 11 was horrible, and that should have never happened to anybody. But now, if I want to do that with somebody else in this group, I can. No one can tell me no. And if I feel uncomfortable with anybody, I can say no. Not only that, but they'll film it so I can watch it anytime I want. And they'll make me famous. And I might get some gifts or some money or something for being in the movies. So I'm being re-victimized every weekend. But I'm thinking I'm the luckiest kid in the world because I'm 12 years old and I'm getting laid.
And this is the group that that the other boy that was doing D&D was involved in, you said?
Yes.
Okay.
You know, like here, my parents are the no police. Anything I want to do, the answer is no.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Dad, there's a concert coming to town. It's the Moody Blues. Can I go see it? No. Dad, there's a new movie coming out. Can I? No. Dad, no. I mean, eventually you just look at my dad a certain way. No. But over there, you know, hey, there's the Moody Blues are coming to town. Can I go see it? Yes. We already have tickets to go see the Moody Blues. That's at night. During the day, we're all going to go see a movie. You know, at my house, you could have 3 meals a day and a snack if my mom was in a good mood. But over there, let's have pizza for lunch. And tonight, you know, how about if we just have some potato chips and a Snicker bar? You know, it's no matter what I want. At my house, all of my ideas are bad ones. Like, my dad doesn't go with a single idea I've ever come up with. I never had a good enough idea for my parents to say yes. But over there, you know, not only do they suggest stuff that I would naturally gravitate towards, but they'll ask me, what do you want to do for dinner? You know, and I'm like, well, I never get to have what I want, so I'll just have whatever you guys want. You know, and they're like, well, no, why don't you tell us what you want? You know, it's like, well, I'd like to have barbecue. Okay, let's do that. You know, let's have barbecue because, you know, he said that's what he wants. You know, it was crazy to me that, you know, my parents, I associated my parents and God as the same thing. God is the no police as well. Everything you want to do, you look in the Bible, everybody that had fun in the Bible was killed. They all died. You know, and there's your parents saying, see, this is what happens when you go off and you have fun, God kills you. You know, but if you were doing good godly fun, I don't see people having good godly fun in the Bible. And I'm not seeing that. You know, even, you know, he talks about, well, Moses came down off the, you know, off the mountain and he had these set of rules. And notice Moses got to live. It's like, yeah, but Moses came down with a rule book. You know, again, that's God telling you, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. Don't do this 10 times. You know, that's the 10 commandments. Don't, it's a list of don'ts.
That's true. That's the way a lot of people look at it, yeah.
You know, and this, I'm looking at it as a kid. You know, it's everything that I want to do is something God says not to do. But where, to me, where my parents dropped the ball is that nowhere did they say, well, God said you can't do this, but let's do this instead. I didn't get the let's do this instead. I didn't get, well, no, you can't do these things are bad for you to do. Why don't we do something that's good for you? They didn't give me alternatives. You know, they just gave me a list of no. They didn't give me a list of maybes or a list of yes. And I saw God the same way. You know, God frees you from sin. But as a kid, that's not how it's seen.
That's a very good point.
I'm not seeing things as, you know, this is what you're allowed to do. I'm just seeing this is what you're not allowed to do.
I'm making mental notes as a parent right now.
You know, so
I don't want to get you sidetracked, but I got to ask this because it's been on my brain since you brought this up. But what's the connection? Because I've seen a lot of this information, and for some reason, Dungeons and Dragons always comes into play. And I realized the late 60s, throughout the 70s, there was a big transcendental meditation movement. I know a lot of the movies of that era were really looking at a different occult angles. I mean, there was all kinds of B movies and horror movies that are the Daughters of Satan and the Spawn of Satan and all kinds of occult imagery. And I mean, even going back to the Kiss records, I mean, as a kid, I always thought that was really cool because they had these cool costumes and they looked all evil and crazy. And, you know, even going into metal album cover art and all that stuff. But the one link that I always see and always hear over and over again is Dungeons and Dragons. And I got to say, I know nothing about this. The only thing I do know is that I like the art and the imagery. I always thought the art was fascinating and the imagery of dragons and sorcerers and all that stuff was really, I guess, visually appealing to me as an artist back then. I was like, man, I wish I could draw as good as this and all that. But I never looked into
Hildebrand.
It any further.
Hildebrand or Boris Vallejo back in the 70s, you know, and the dragons and the muscle-bound guy carrying the battle axe or, you know, near topless women or whatever, you know, your little kid.
Yeah.
You know, wanting to live that fantasy life or whatever. But the thing about D&D to me, you know, if you played D&D now, the gaming books are different than the way they used to be. The gaming books now, you know, so you need a magic spell for light. So you take this 20-sided die and you throw it, and if you're, you know, if your charismatic score is high enough and if you roll a 15 or higher, your magic trick will work. That's
okay.
Not magic. That's not how a magic spell works. You know, in the early books, you know, you actually gathered up everything you needed for the magic spell, and the early books listed how the magic spells worked. And they had real magic spells. The guys that invented D&D was a guy named Gary Gygax and another guy who his name is not as cool as Gary Gygax. So much so that I don't remember his name.
Gotcha.
So obviously Gygax had the cooler name. But these guys went to real Satanists and witches and said, we want to make our game authentic. You know, can you give us some real spells? So they gave them real spells that went into these books. So, you know, when I was looking at doing magic spells, that's what I had to go by. You know, there wasn't like, if you went to the library, you had to use the Dewey Decimal System. You know, you didn't have a computer, you know, to look up how to do magic or something. You know, I don't even know if there were magic books back then, but I was not of the sort. They would have had to have been in Cliff Notes or something for me to want to read something, because I wasn't really into reading a 6-inch book trying to, you know, get all the information for something. But D&D made it fun. D&D was, like I said, it's a map-based game. It's a role-playing game. You know, you became the character you want to be. You know, and you got to wear a costume sometimes. I was into LARPing as well, live action role play. And, you know, you dress like your character. You know, as at my friends, we would dress like our characters and go into a room and play. And like we would, you know, act like wherever you are, this is how you're really acting. So like if you're in a room and you're playing like you're in a cave and it's total darkness, you flick off the lights in the room and you're trying to get around. And it's as if you're really there. You're really having this much fun, you know. But I've talked to hundreds of people, if not thousands, that have played D&D, and it wasn't, you know, it didn't eventually lead them to a world of Satanism. For me, D&D was my gateway drug. You know, some people smoke marijuana, and 20 years later, they're dying in an alley of a heroin overdose. And the first drug they ever did was marijuana. Some people smoke marijuana, and all they ever do is smoke marijuana. Some people smoke it one time, and they never do it again. You know, for me, D&D was my marijuana that eventually led me to heroin. And, you know, I went the furthest, I was an extremist, so I went the furthest I could possibly go, you know, which was becoming the high wizard in the World Church of Satan. You know, and how I got my start was being in a bathroom, chanting the Bloody Mary thing, making that face appear, and then playing D&D and thinking this is the greatest game ever. You know, eventually, though, it was like, if magic's not real, I'm wasting my time. You know, yeah, it's fun to do in a game, but, you know, the dungeon master is saying that, yes, it worked or no, it didn't. Can I do this in real life? Finding out that I could do it in real life put a totally different spin on my world.
It definitely sounds creepy. I mean, it sounds like it sort of, as you told the story, you know, it sounds like it gradually crept in more and more and more until it really just grabbed a hold of your whole life and opened all these gateways that you may not have known how to close. I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there.
Well, you know, to me, everything I was doing was fun. Even if I did something that on occasion was creepy, you know, stuff would move in my bedroom on its own. You know, the first couple of times that happens, you might could say it was the wind. You know, the door slammed shut. Obviously, the wind caused that. But then when you discover that no other doors are open in the house, no windows are open, you know, sometimes a ball would bounce through my house. It might not be mine, or it might be mine, but where is it coming from? And how, what's causing it to bounce? I could see it rolling through the house, but it's bouncing as if somebody's walking with it, bouncing it like it's a basketball, but there's nobody walking with it.
That's creepy, man.
Yeah. You know, and, you know, when you're a little kid, you're not thinking of there's a demon walking beside it bouncing the ball. You know, and of the possibilities, could it be a dead relative playing basketball? Maybe it's a kid. Maybe a kid died and now the kid is here. I don't want to be mean to the kid. You know, and as it, you know, you're a little kid, you're not the brightest bulb at that age. You know, I tell parents, you know, you've got to give your kids answers that they ask you. Because if they don't get it from you, they're either going to go online, where we all know they find out the absolute truth on the internet, or they're going to ask their friends who are just as stupid as they are.
That's a great point.
You know, you got to give them, you can't be afraid or ashamed or too shy to answer whatever it is your child is asking you. Because if he can't get the answer from you, he's going to go someplace else. And is that really the most reliable source, whatever it is? You know, your son's 12 years old, so he's going to ask another 12-year-old. Well, if your 12-year-old didn't know the answer, how do they know the answer? You know, these kids have the same Google with each other. You really want them to look up Google?
Yeah, that's the terrifying thing. Encyclopedias back in the day used to be kind of tame compared to what you're going to get if you Google some of the things now.
Yeah, I mean, there was one of my friends, his daughter was looking up something to do with animals, and it was an innocent question. But bestiality porn came up.
Oh, gosh.
You know, and I said, when he was saying that, you know, his daughter was looking this up, I said, I wouldn't let my child use the internet like that.
No way.
He's like, why not? He was like, why not? And I said, because there's porn everywhere. And if you don't have, like, really good software to keep them away from it, it'll find its way in. And he says, well, now that you say that, you know, she brought me a website. She brought the tablet to me and said, Dad, what's this? I don't understand what I'm looking at.
Oh, man.
And he looked at it, and it was a bestiality website.
Jeez.
And he says, luckily, she didn't see anything horribly bad. It was like the opening thing showed animals having sex with each other. If you opened it, then you saw people and animals having sex together. You know, she's like, at least that one I can say, this is natural, this happens in the animal world. You know, I'm sorry that you found it. You know, let's not go to that website again.
It really terrifies me how permissive parents are with all these devices and computers. I feel like my family is the only one that really won't let our child touch the phone except to look at our own pictures that my wife's taken on the phone or something. But most people, it's just a here's a babysitting device so we can sit around and play with our own device, I guess.
Right. So, you know, getting involved in this first coven, not at first not knowing what it was, you know, I'm starring in kiddie porn as a child.
Man, that's heavy.
And, you know, thinking I'm the luckiest kid in the world because every boy at school talks about, I did this weekend, I did that. You know, these kids have never seen, unless they saw their brothers, their older brother's porno or their dad's Playboy magazine or something, they've never come close to seeing any of the stuff that I'm seeing every weekend. Because these kids are just lying. And it's like, any 12-year-old friend's not getting laid every weekend. I'm not bragging to anybody about what's happening because I don't want someone to chance finding out that I'm really doing it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want these people to get in trouble. I don't want to get in trouble. So, you know, we're doing all this stuff, but this older kid one day said, you know, you're a member of a satanic coven, right? And I laughed it off. But, you know, after a couple of weeks, I was like, am I a member of a satanic coven? So I went to an adult that I trusted, and I said, hey, you got to laugh. And he goes, sure, what? And I said, I heard this was a satanic coven. Crazy, right? And he just looked at me really serious, and he said, it is.
Oh, wow.
And my heart just went right into my stomach, and I was like, am I a member? No. Would you like to be? All right. Now I got to think about it. You know, and I get a lot of people that ask me, why would you want to be a member of a satanic coven? I mean, okay, you've said that God is the no police and your parents are the no police, you know, and, but this is the devil. I grew up Baptist, and in the Baptist church, we were taught that Jesus defeated the devil 2,000 years ago on the cross, and he's no threat. And that the devil is afraid of the Baptist church. Now, if that were true, then based on what the Bible says, wouldn't that mean that the Baptist church is stronger than God? Because the first battle in history is Satan versus God. And in the Bible, I'm going to paraphrase here, so don't quote me on this, but in my paraphrase, St. Michael the Archangel handed Satan his ass. And that's when one-third the demons got kicked out of heaven. So Satan's not afraid of God because he attacked him on his own turf, but he's afraid of the Baptist church. Again, that, you know, I wasn't really up on my Bible. You know, we could quote a bunch of Bible verses, but I didn't know that one. I didn't know, you know, about that battle. That was never read from the pulpit. So, you know, I'm wondering why not be a Satanist?
Yeah, I mean, you've already gotten the girls, the money, and somewhat of a bit of fame or infamy, I'm assuming, in these circles. So, I mean, you know, going back to your age and everything, I mean, when you're 15 or 16, that sounds pretty good, probably.
Well, okay, so I'm 12 years old.
Oh, you're 12. I'm sorry. I was off.
I'm 12. And at 12 years old, I'm addicted to porn. Got to be 18 to buy porn. Well, I'm still 12. Got to be 19 to buy cigarettes, which I smoke every day. I'm still 12. Got to be 21 to buy booze. I'm getting drunk at least on the weekend. I'm still 12. I'm having sex almost every weekend. If I quit my coven, that sex is going to go bye-bye.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm taking illegal drugs. Sometimes during the week, definitely on the weekends, though. I don't know where to get that. So, sure. Yeah, let's join. What do I have to do? Well, there's 13 steps to join the Satanic Coven, and I had done almost all of them already. All I had left to do, I had to slice my left thumb and bleed onto a document And then I had to sign that document in three places. The blood of Jesus washes away all sin, but not mine. And I signed that.
Wow.
Jesus died for everybody, but not me. And I signed that. And then on the fifth page of a five-page document, I agreed to sell my soul to the devil. Now, anybody that's listening to this show, I would like to let them know, just in case they've sold their soul to the devil, that it is impossible to sell what you do not own. You may have heard that the devil's a liar. I'm here to confirm. The devil tells you good morning. Get a second opinion. But at 13, which is how old I was when I signed this, again, you're not the sharpest tack. So I believed that you could sell your soul to the devil. Now, the example that I use in my talks is I usually have an assistant that sits next to me, and I ask them, what kind of car do you own? Whatever they say, I then ask the audience members, how many of you can legally sell me this person's car? You know, and usually there's somebody in the audience that didn't quite follow the conversation, and they'll say, you legally sell? And yes, legally. Thank you for playing. Legally sell. And they're like, well, you can't legally sell it. Like, right. That's the same reason you can't sell your soul. You don't own it. God died for you. Jesus paid the ultimate price for your soul. You can't loan it. You can't lease it. You certainly cannot sell it. What you can do is give your will to the devil. All you've got to do to get your will back is confess it. Once you've confessed it, your will goes back to God. But, again, 13 years old, and, you know, as all teenagers, you know, we all know everything. So I knew when I sold my soul, that was it. It was gone forever, you know, and I could never get it back. So, you know, also for the people that believe that they have sold their soul, if you truly don't believe that you can ever get it back, then you're thinking that the creature is more powerful than the creator. And that's totally asinine. And that's like you saying that the cabinet is stronger than the cabinet maker. You know, the cabinet maker made you. He can destroy you, too. But, you know, a mere creature, I'm a mere creature. The devil is a bit higher creature than me. But eventually I have the option to go to heaven. He's an idiot and does not. So, I agreed that I wanted to do this. And so after signing this document in three places, then there was a large meeting where the entire coven gathers together. I'm in a white robe. It signifies losing my innocence. I'm baptized in full submersion in a vat of human blood, pig's blood, and human urine.
Good grief.
I come up out of that, and I go take a shower. I come back out in a black robe. Signifies of being baptized into a world of darkness. I sit in a chair. They hand me a crucifix that's in a wheel, and I spin that upside down, signifying human sacrifice. And I grab the crucifix by the arms, and then they read the document off that I signed the night before. I show them my left thumb so they can see that it's my blood that I signed in, and then I break the arms downward, denouncing Christ. And at this point, you're left with what looks like a peace sign. They take the document and intertwine it with that, and they say this is going into a vault, and your soul will be forever tied to this. And then we have a party celebrating that I'm now a Satanist. But the reality is you're celebrating that one day you're going to die and go to hell. And then this coven shared their magic books with me. And all the ways they do magic. I mean, if you're in a room with 50 people and everybody does a love spell, everybody does it differently. And that's what I wanted to learn, was what are all the different ways to do magic? So I got to be one of the main magic practitioners, which there doesn't have a title. You know, you just practice magic or you don't. But in that coven, almost everybody did magic. And, you know, I got to learn. When I was 14 years old, we had a sex party. It was going to be all the male members from about 12 years old to 16, 15 or 16, and a female coven member that was 19. And the purpose of the party was to make her pregnant. And I was told, we're going to make her pregnant, and then 8 or 9 months later, we're going to have an abortion. And I said, cool.
Good grief.
And I went home. I went home to look up the word abortion because I didn't know what it meant. And we had some books on abortion that were like really thick in the library. And I was not going to read 2 or 3 inches of a book to find out what one word means. My dictionary did not have the word abortion in it. So I went back to my coven and I said, hey, I heard I've got to do an abortion in a few months, but I don't know what that means. And the guy said, hey, you're killing a baby in the womb.
Oh, man.
You know, and I was like, is that legal? Yeah, in the womb, legal, has the womb murdered. Oh, okay.
That's logical.
Well, you know, my dad used to make these statements about people talking out of both sides of their mouth. And that never made sense to me. I didn't know what that meant. Like, how do you talk out of both sides of your mouth? And then, you know, in 2015, there was this guy named David DeLeiden. And David DeLeiden shot 8 secret Planned Parenthood videos.
Okay, where, I remember that.
And they made international news where people at Planned Parenthood are saying that they wanted to sell baby body parts and that they were trying to buy a Lamborghini. You know, and that if she knows if she sold enough baby body parts that she could do that. She could buy a Lamborghini. And then I realized what talking out of both sides of your mouth meant. Because out of one side of Planned Parenthood's mouth, they say, it's a lump of cells. We're just scraping out some tissue. It's not alive. You're just going to have a little medical procedure, and then you're no longer pregnant. You know, you're just going to scrape out some cells or some tissue, and that's cool. All right. Well, I mean, you know, an abortion, you know, I guess, you know, it's an innocent thing. But then out of the other side of their mouth, they're selling a brain, lungs, kidneys, spleen, liver. How do you get all that out of something that's not human?
Now they're pushing the post-term abortions, basically, in New York and Virginia already. So,
right. But I mean,
post-birth,
you know,
I guess.
How do you get a brain from something that's not human? How do you get lungs and a liver and kidneys from something that's not human? You can't.
Exactly.
It's impossible. So, Planned Parenthood talks out of both sides of their mouth.
I got to ask, I'm guessing in the town you were in, like, where was this taking place? Was it a specific location? Was it a building?
It would have been, the first time I did it, it was in a farmhouse.
Okay.
Now, the farmhouse was more sterile than some abortion clinics I was later in.
Hmm.
And it was full of medical equipment and a doctor and a nurse. And the first one I did took place when I was about 3 months before turning 15. You know, it was...
Was this where the members of the coven, were they meeting at a facility just in the town that nobody knew about?
That particular place was one of the members' house.
Okay.
And it was a farmhouse, and it sat on I don't know how many acres of land, and they had an actual business. And, you know, this was just after hours at night on the weekends. And the woman, the 19-year-old girl, I guess by the time the abortion took place, she would have been 20, but she was, she had been hired by a member of the, like, town council or something like that. And he was, like, trying to pass something that wasn't being passed. So he contacted our coven because he'd done that, I guess, in the past. And, hired her to have an abortion as part of a spell.
This is so disturbing. I want everybody that's listening to this to understand that this is a real incident. This is what was really going on. So if this was going on this badly in the 1970s, how bad do you think it's really going on right now?
Well, I mean, I have a book out called Abortion is a Satanic Sacrifice. It's the transcript of a CD set that I put out. The CD set came out in December of 2015. And at the point that it came out, the ideas I give you in it tell you how to shut down an abortion clinic through spiritual warfare. If you fight something that is spiritual warfare, you have to fight it with spiritual warfare. If you fight a spiritual battle physically, nothing will happen. Spiritual battle has to take place spiritually. Fighting a spiritual battle physically, it's like nothing occurs in that instance. But if it wasn't spiritual warfare, then spiritual warfare wouldn't shut it down. When the CD set had come out, we had our methods were already tried and true. We had already shut down 25 abortion clinics.
That's pretty impressive in and of itself.
Methods. Then, now we've shut down 39 abortion clinics. And we only know about what gets shut down because people call us or email us and tell us. So if more places are shut down, no one's told me. But we had an abortion clinic in Los Angeles, or the Los Angeles area, that used to be open 7 days a week and was doing approximately 70 abortions a week.
Jeez.
And then someone started pulling, a parishioner would pull the van up into the abortion clinic is in a strip mall. And so somebody drives there in the morning and parks in the parking lot. And then if a place opens up in front of the abortion clinic, this van pulls up into that spot. Then they call the exorcist. And if the exorcist is able to, he shows up. He gets in the back of the van, and he does a mass in front of the clinic, and then he does an exorcism. And they've been doing that now for over a year. I think in August would make 2 years that that's been going on. They went from being open 7 days to six to five. Now they're open 3 days a week. And they perform zero abortions. They hand out contraception, and they can recommend you go to a different clinic for an abortion, but they can't perform them anymore at their clinic.
That's some pretty amazing work right there.
To go from 7 days a week to three, and from 70 abortions to zero, that's a pretty good deal.
That's a great, great deal. I wish more churches really spoke to that spiritual warfare angle. I think most of them now, sadly, just kind of relegate the spirituality aspect of the Bible to just, I don't even know what to say, just sort of relegate it almost out completely and just want to talk about the good news and the...
The Catholic Church still does exorcisms, we have one of our popes a few years ago asked that every diocese have an exorcist. We still have, and that was 25 years ago that he asked that. We still have dioceses that don't have exorcists. We still have dioceses that they might have an exorcist, but he doesn't believe in the devil. He doesn't believe in demons. Even the bishop doesn't believe in demons or the devil or hell. I mean, we have certain heresies within the Catholic Church that still exist. I mean, I think universalism is the belief that hell will be empty, that everybody goes to heaven. It's like, well, what is the fairness in that? I mean, if we have a God that's 100% justice and 100% mercy, where is it fair that Adolf Hitler goes to heaven with me? Now, if Adolf Hitler converted, you know, in that last breath of hope, he apologized for all his atrocities and accepted Jesus into his heart, then yes, absolutely, he should get to go to heaven eventually. If he was truly sorry for everything he did. But if he deserves to be in hell, let him go. You know, within the Catholic Church, we're taught that hell is a mercy. If you have spent your entire life fighting against God, you don't want to have anything to do with God, and you've purposely knocked onto church, and you've fought against everything that's godly, wouldn't it be hell for you to have to go to heaven?
That's the truth, yeah.
So hell is a mercy for people like that.
It seems so bizarre to me that these different dioceses and folks you're talking about, I just don't understand how they can not believe in the demonic and not believe in these sort of activities going on. That just seems insane.
Certain, like in Brazil, for example. In Brazil, they practice liberation theology. Liberation theology, think of communism that believes in God. So they believe that you should help clothe the homeless and shelter the homeless and feed the homeless. But when they die, they won't go to heaven and they won't go to hell. There's no demons and angels. But here's a warm meal.
Kind of doing the inverse of that parable where they are supposed to teach a man how to fish, they're just giving him fish.
Right, right. So in Brazil, there's zero exorcists. And if a bishop appointed somebody as an exorcist, it would upset all the priests of that diocese, because none of them believe in the devil. If you are watching somebody's head spin around and then vomit green pea soup out of their mouth, and the 12 voices coming out of their mouth at the same time, they're schizophrenic. Now, I don't know.